This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Trucks on the South African roads have been blamed for the carnage and destruction they have caused, primarily due to, of course, the network that's crumbling and the rail infrastructure. A rise in heavy vehicle traffic also means that roads not designed to carry those heavy vehicles are unable to cope, causing damage to the road surface and endangering other drivers. We've seen that over the years, ever since there was a shift in the energy space whereby coal needed or was begun to be asked to be transferred by trucks rather than the trains. I mean, there was that dual carriageway at some point, trucks and rail. But you know what? I think it was about 2008, 2009, we already began to saw what trucks were beginning to do to our road networks, just carrying those amounts of coal. Well, it hasn't stopped. We still see the trucks on the road. And in September, a truck accident in Pongola killed about 20 people, including 18 children. Since then, scores of other people have died with trucks and motor vehicle accidents on our roads. Well, just to shed some light into all of that, I'm going to bring the Road Traffic Management Corporation's spokesperson Simon Zwane into the conversation. Also, Etienne Pell, national chairperson of the United Towing Association of South Africa. And then, of course, Mary Pardee, president of the Truckers Association of South Africa. Good evening to all of you, Mary, Etienne, and Simon. Welcome to Power 98.7 at this particular late hour. Good evening.
Good evening, Denzel.
Good evening. Simon?
Evening, Denzel. How are you?
I'm good, good, man. Etienne?
Good evening, Denzel. Thank you for the opportunity.
Sure, sure. And Mary, how are you?
Good evening, Denzel.
Good, good. Mary, let's start with you, Mary. It's not something new where we see the amount of volume of heavy duty, you know, vehicles on our roads. It's not something new, right? And pretty much where do you see it beginning? Was it around 2007, 2008 in the shift of policy? Was that the big movement to get heavy duty vehicles onto our roads, particularly around the point where we started having problems with electricity and coal?
You know, it started in 2007. Uh-huh. When Eskom was giving opportunities to quite a number of companies, and those trucks were supplying power stations. And obviously this year, due to the closure of those power stations, there's quite a congestion of trucks that are going down to KZN to the harbour, so that most of the products can be exported.
And so now, I remember the Witbank area particularly prone to a huge amount of accidents. And you speak exactly to that particular area, 2007, when Eskom did begin to bring, you know, heavy-duty vehicles into the space because it just needed, you know, so much more coal at that particular point. And so we saw rail as well. And so it's remained with us. And over time, we what is it now, 13, 14, 15 years later, we now still talking about it. In essence, has the infrastructure developed to such an extent that it was able and or still capable of carrying that weight of the decision that was made in 2007? Because the two need to be related. If you make that kind of decision in 2007, you seemingly do have a plan over the years to begin to elevate your roads, to begin to build that infrastructure, begin to think in a different way. That hasn't happened, has it?
Look, we can not run away from the fact that there were no accident at the level that it is now. And, you know, looking at what is happening, we need to acknowledge the fact that the introduction of the IPPs and you know, the challenge of the most of the countries outside countries are needing coal as a matter of urgency.
Mm.
Therefore, the trucks that were feeding power stations are now going down because you cannot lose money. We are coming from the COVID.
Mm.
And the infrastructure cannot carry that. If you look at the Pongola Road, it's quite narrow. And the number of trucks that are passing there are much more than what was not planned.
Mm.
But it is obvious that these things, we tend to attend to them as the problem comes. But now that we did not see it coming, we can only engage in understanding as to what is it that how can we resolve the issue. We need to, you know, tighten up the rules and obviously depend on the operators so that they can be able to think safety and try to guard everyone. Hence, TASA had engaged with the Department of Transport to say, look, we need to regulate the industry. We need to know who's where. And if that was done on time, we are still running with the policy of 1988.
Mm.
And if that could have happened in time, it could have saved many lives.
Mm.
With that said, we've taken an initiative to make sure that we are engaging our drivers, we are engaging operators, we are making sure that we are speeding up the process. There's a rail runner project that is coming in where we are moving from road to rail to reduce at least 20% of trucks on the road.
Mm. Etienne, let me bring you in. Etienne, you've heard what Mary's just said. It's a historical problem in essence. I'll take your comments first on what Mary has said, and then let's interrogate a little further.
Okay, thanks, Dingle.
Sure.
Yeah, no, I've some of my signal has broken up badly where I am.
Sure.
So you can just
blame Eskom. Blame Eskom, Etienne.
Yeah, thanks a lot for that.
Etienne, yeah?
No, carry on.
No. Based on the kind of, you know, stats and historical context that Mary is talking about, do you have anything to add before I just begin to ask a question?
No, I think, you know, she's pretty spot on what she said of that, which I managed to hear because of the breakup in the signal.
Mm.
But you can go ahead with your question because, you know, there is something I'd like to say afterwards, but I think let's just go with the questions first.
Sure. Do you think that there needs to be a regulation of the industry? You know, I mean, it's been happening haphazardly since about 2007. It was a decision that, of course, as a country, we needed to make. And I've also put it to Mary and to all of you also that I, for one, did not think that the roads kept up with the kind of demand that was beginning to be made. And Mary also makes the point that she says, you see so many more accidents now on the roads versus what, you know, you previously would have seen. And I'd be interested to understand why that would be a fact.
Well, I think, Denzel, you know, we've got to get to the starting point first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, although there are more accidents, and obviously the new terminology that we use is crashes.
Mm.
We refer to crashes.
Mm.
We've got to start at the starting point.
Sure.
Why are these crashes happening?
Mm.
You know, it's not a reason of influx of trucks or motor vehicles. It comes down to the behavior of drivers. I mean, if we take that incident you were referring to of the children that were killed,
yeah,
that was pure. That was driver behavior. It was reckless.
Mm.
So you can't be blaming it on the trucks. I mean, we've got a transport network that is obviously not up to scratch that it should be,
yeah,
and hence that you're having a lot more vehicles on the roads and trucks and so forth.
Yeah.
But to be honest with you, and I'm very vociferous when it comes to this kind of thing, you know, we have very, very good law enforcement officers out there.
Mm.
However, we do have a lot of law enforcement officers that are not enforcing the law for whatever reason it might be.
Mm.
I can give you an example. How many weighbridges don't we have on our national networks?
Yeah.
Are these weighbridges being used? I know one in Colesberg that is there. How often does it get used? The one at Monsoli on the N1, is it still being used? And there's always a there's always excuses of the contractors and who it's contracted out to, and it doesn't belong to this person, and so forth. So until such time that we don't start doing proper law enforcement in all arenas of motor vehicles, be it light motor vehicles, be it trucks, irrespective, until such time that that is not done, we are going to keep on losing this battle.
Mm. And it's law enforcement for you. That's the ultimate one. If we upgraded law enforcement, and you say, apart from the fact that we've got more trucks on the road, more vehicles on the road, and everything else, and the road structure not basically keeping up with all of that, for you, the main gripe would be if we could get law enforcement to begin to actually do its work, we'd see a lot less of these kind of accidents.
Well, absolutely. Denzel, I can tell you, I've put it forward to the departments before, and it's written into the National Road Traffic Act that you can have a traffic reservist force. I do know that some of my friends that I know at the RTMC are busy looking into that. And I mean, myself speaking from a law enforcement background, where I used to be in the traffic.
Mm.
And if I see how it was those days when we were working compared to today, it's disastrous.
Mm.
And, you know, we're always talking about the manpower. There's not enough manpower. There are departments that are not available from, I think, around about 8 or 10 o'clock at night till the next morning in certain areas. So, you know, if you don't have the visibility and you don't have people enforcing the law properly,
Look at
the stats, and I'm sure that Simon will agree with me.
Mm.
If you look at the stats of when crashes are happening, and a lot of your fatals are happening, are from a Friday evening to a Monday morning.
Mm.
I mean, the stats are available. So, you know, I think we've got to make sure that we use the avenues available. If you don't have manpower, we've put it forward. Get the traffic reservists in operation. These are people that obviously must come from a background that they've had done traffic law enforcement before, qualified, get them on the road and, you know, work it just the same as that you would do it with the South African Police Reservist Force. I mean, there's no reason we can't do it. These people are committed. Mm. Instead of these vehicles standing around at the people's houses at night, you can put them to good use. And I can guarantee you, if you've got better law enforcement and you've got more law enforcement and you're more visible, you are definitely going to have a better impact.
So I'm going to go to Simon's one next. But Simon, Sam's come onto the line. Sam in Ebony Park. Simon, I'm going to come to you. I just need to deal with Sam quickly. Sam, you've come onto the line in the last minute or so. You're in Ebony Park.
Yes, but now I'm on the road. I'm a truck driver, Sam.
You're a truck driver and you're on the road, Sam, and you're listening, right?
Yeah. Yes, I'm listening.
Sure?
Oh, yeah. So, look, most of the companies, they don't comply with main collective agreement. Hello?
Sam, I can hear you. Just keep talking, Sam.
Yes. Main collective agreement says a driver must work 15 hours a day. If you come to work by 6 o'clock in the morning, you must knock out by 9 o'clock in the evening and rest 9 consecutive hours. But most of the companies does not comply with those main collective agreement of road freight. And for example, if you drive on a road from here to Durban, from Joburg to Durban, there is a lot of containers, there is a lot of people. Those people are getting paid by load. So for you to get paid, you must load lot of load so that you can get paid well, man.
And you spend more time. Are you saying you need to spend more time on the road and people are not resting?
Yes, they're not resting. And of which, some of the companies they're running away from main collective agreement. Remember, main collective agreement says you must work 15 consecutive hours a day.
Mm.
But companies will tell you that they pay you by turning wheel. By saying so, turning wheel, that means when you start your truck, you are at work. When you get where you are going to load, when you switch off your truck, I think you are not at work. So therefore, that means you must be resting there. You must rest if they load your truck for 2 hours. Then after that 2 hours, you drive 4 hours to a next customer. And then when they offload, you must sleep another 1 hour. That is the problem that we are facing here in our industry.
Sam, let's leave it there. Sam, I'm going to leave that.
Yes.
I'm going to leave that with you, Sam. Let's go to Simon. Simon, Sam uses a terminology that I'm not quite used to. He says the turning wheels terminology is the one that they work to. So they get paid and they get rewarded and benefits are for when the wheels are turning on the truck. Simon, you've heard Etienne and you've heard Mary. I'll ask you to contribute to that as well, but please take on Sam's comments as well.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Sure.
Yeah, I think the problem is really multifaceted. As I had ATN talking about the human factors that are involved, that is then driver behavior. And it is one, but one of the problems. I mean, the main problem, I would think it's also corruption. Corruption in the sector, but also corruption, the corrupt ways in which some of the drivers obtain their heavy motor vehicle licenses. I mean, we know from investigations that we've done that many of them don't even get into driving a truck before they get.
Is that the corruption you're talking about? Is how people acquire their driver's licenses,
that's not only that.
Oh, sure, yes. Sure. Expand on that corruption.
It's the way that people acquire their driving licenses through corrupt ways. So, which means they really cannot drive. But it's also corruption that operators themselves get involved in. They don't take their cars for the regular roadworthy tests. And many of the accidents that we investigated, we find that either there was a brake failure or tire failure. And we have had investigations that really indicate that you find a truck driving on the N3 in a particular date, but on the same day, a roadworthy certificate of that vehicle is being issued somewhere in Mpumalanga. Now, this truck can't be driving on the N3 in KwaZulu-Natal and be in Mpumalanga at the same time for a roadworthy test to be issued. So it's all of those issues together. And Sam talks about the kind of pressure that they are put under by the employers.
Yeah.
And that is also a contribution. I can tell you that we've had interventions with stationed traffic officers on the N2 and the N3. For the month of November, they've stopped and checked about 2,000 vehicles on both routes, and issued not less than 1,000 traffic fines. But here's what's shocking: they've been arresting people for driving under the influence of alcohol and driving inconsiderately and recklessly. Now, how do you drive really under the influence of alcohol when you are driving a heavy vehicle that is loaded? So all of these factors come into play. And then some of the people, when they're arrested, maybe after a crash and all of that, that get taken to court, the court would release them on R1,000 bail, even though the person is an undocumented citizen and had displayed gross negligence on the road.
Sure. Simon, I'm going to ask you, Simon, before I go to Etienne and before I go to Mary. Simon, how then do we deal with it, Simon? What happens? I mean, I've got the national chairperson of the United Towing Association of South Africa here. Yeah? I've got the president of the Truckers Association of South Africa here. Yeah? I've got road traffic management spokesperson here. Yeah? Some of the key holders are here. So I get all of this, that, you know, the driving under the influence, reckless, the sort of corruption you talk about, driver behavior. Then there's the aspect also of you know, Etienne talks about law enforcement aspects. So it is what it is then, and I think every single one of you acknowledges it. And so instead of seeing the kind of accidents and the carnage on the roads that we're seeing, what's actually been done? What's the forward movement here on this particular one?
Yeah. Let me start with that one. Mm. I think ATN is correct that the crashes happen mostly at night and early hours of the morning.
Mm.
And that's the time when in some provinces there's no visibility of traffic officers. So, but we are working on that. Through the introduction of a 24-hour, 7 days shift for traffic officers, we've been engaging with provinces on that, because in many provinces, traffic officers are employed under the public service regulation, so they work public service hours, and when they have to be on the roads after hours, it's overtime.
Mm.
So we think that if we can introduce a 24-hour shift system, so that they work like the police.
Mm.
Police work
24/7 now. Mm.
Yeah. So some provinces have agreed to that. They're in the process of introducing that. I know that it's done in the Western Cape. We work with the National Traffic Police, and they work 24/7. Mm. And these are the people who have deployed on the N3 and N2 in Pongola to stabilize that situation there. And that is why we're seeing calmness, a bit of calmness on those routes now. But yes, we need to have much more visibility so that truck drivers know even before they get into KwaZulu-Natal, when they live in Mpumalanga or wherever they live, they must see traffic officers on the road, and they must see enforcement happening consistently across in all provinces. Mm.
Mary, let me go back to you before I go back to Etienne. Mary, a lot has been said, Mary. Since I last spoke to you about, Etienne has come on and very passionate about, and he talks about crashes. And that's the terminology that's used. And he says, why are they happening? When are they happening? And then, of course, him and Etienne and Simon seem to agree that they're happening at particular hours. But then Simon comes on and begins to also talk about driver behavior, corruption in the sector. For example, the licenses aspect, braking, you know, brakes failure, tire failure. Those are just, you know, roadworthy issues. And my question then to Simon also then is, what needs to be done? But you can speak to some of those other issues there, but also to my question then, how do we solve what we're beginning to see emerging on the roads?
Look, the we need to appreciate the fact that you know, when TASA was launched in 2017, the first thing that we had made the public aware in the freight industry was that the industry is not regulated.
Mm.
It's an open access. Anyone can come in with a vehicle, and that person only gets an operator card that is registered to the municipality. But the Department of Transport could not have any information. So there was no official document that was guiding the employers or operators to be able to tell them as to what are the rules that must be put in place. Mm. And on the 5th of October 2020, we then took a memorandum to the Department of Transport to say, regulate the industry. Mm. And the good news is that this year, on the 29th of September 2022, the Economic Regulation Bill past. So there is something that is happening. While we are monitoring the situation on the ground, but you had to deal with the policy. And the policy now is going to assist us to be able to put everybody in a space whereby whatever wrong that you are doing as an operator, you can be able to, we can be able to terminate your license, or maybe we can be able to suspend you so that you can fix other things as an operator. And, you know, it will bring transparency and control from the Department of Transport. And, you know, another thing is that, you know, it will force operators to be able to renew their licenses. So as we engage on those things, we'll be able to put in some extra rules. Look, if we can have co-drivers with this long distance, I agree with Sam that came to say, I'm traveling 15 hours. That person must be tired. And the minute you get tired, you become impatient on the road. And the document that has been done under the 11-point plan, implementation plan that was formed, the task team formed this year, it must be talking, it must be urgently talking to the court drivers. And, you know, to put a very strict rule with screening of the truck drivers, because we are where we are, whereby we need to appreciate the fact that some of the employers are taking shortcuts with employing people who don't even have documentation. The person that did not even, you know, train very well with a driver's license from the municipality, climbing into the truck, no experience and nothing. And, you know, the task team now is looking at the college to say, now that there are no more truck drivers, they're professional drivers, let them go and train somewhere and come back and fulfill their position as professional drivers so that you don't see these small mistakes that are not necessary. If you do research all over the world, you can see that it's very rare you find a truck in an accident. And what is causing us to ignore that, and what is causing South Africans to think that, you know, killing one person is a norm.
Sure.
We need to stop that as a matter of urgency.
Mary, just before I go to Etienne, Mary, what kind of authority do you have outside of your association, Mary? Because you would have members, right? And you have had a membership. But the industry is broad and it's not regulated. So what kind of brief do you have outside of your association? So that, you know the kind of things that you talk about are felt.
As an association, we also have the RFA, you know, parallel to what TASA is doing at national level. So in our association, with our members that are there, they know that whatever accident that happens, we've got a sticker that we give it to our members. Anything that happens, you are held liable for that accident. And we monitor the accident as to in which company they're coming from. And we also had agreed and signed a document with the ATDF on time before the strikes were going on, that we are going to reduce the number of foreign truck drivers. We signed that document, and 90% of our truck drivers are South African drivers. Now we are short of the issue of training them. So we have tightened our rules, and we are going to terminate the membership if the member is not listening. So we have, you know, surely tightened up from our side as an association, but it shows that we are really committed to transform the industry, because if we had approached the Department of Transport, we wouldn't be here. There wouldn't be any regulation, because everybody could have been quiet and it could have been the same. And even the truck drivers that are now having a voice, they wouldn't have had a voice, you know, should TASA didn't stand up and say, look, this is not going to be normal. We cannot be things cannot happen as usual. We need to stop this monopoly, and we need to attack these things head on.
Sure. Etienne? A lot said between Simon, the last time I spoke to you, between Simon and Mary. And I think Simon, dealing with some of your issues and elaborating on some of your issues, would you like to elaborate on some of the stuff that Simon was saying, the kind of stuff that you're seeing, and particularly talking to driver behavior, the corruption that's happening in the system, just basic, mechanisms such as breakdowns and tire failures and those sort of things. And then Sam came into the picture as well, talking about the kind of hours. Let's hear from you on all of those.
Yeah, Denzel, look, if I can just go back to what Mary said earlier on, you know, talking about the regulation and, you know, the training and so on.
Yeah.
I can tell you from a towing perspective, from where we sit, and we have been talking to the National Department of Transport. We are role players at the Road Incident Management Systems National Technical Committee, where we sit quarterly and we discuss the crashes that are happening on our roads and the different places in South Africa and the condition of the roads and so forth.
Mm.
The problem is that not much is being done. You know, I've even got to a point that I've said in meetings, they ask me, why am I quiet? And I say to them, well, look, you know, I don't want to sound like a broken record every time. We keep on discussing the same issues over and over and over. And until such time that we don't take action, not much is going to happen. But in terms of the training, you know, I've said it a long time and we've discussed this with Department of Transport because they are stakeholders to our Road Incident Management Systems system. And I've said to them, you know what, the PRDP, which is the Professional Driver's Permit that everybody refers to, most people refer to it as a PDP. It's actually a PRDP. The problem is a PRDP, in my opinion, is a money-making business for government. And the reason I say this is you're just going to go to a doctor, you are okay, you are healthy, and even they're corrupt because you pay somebody perhaps and they just give you a certificate to say that you are healthy. Actually, you're not. You go for your eye test and that is basically where it ends. In terms of the National Road Traffic Act, you shouldn't be getting a professional driver's permit if you have been found guilty for reckless or negligent driving, assault, driving under the influence of alcohol. So my question would go back to the department is to say, is this actually monitored to make sure that when people apply for these...
But you sit in those meetings, Etienne, and all the stakeholders seem to be there. And the kind of questions you're putting here are obviously some of those questions and statements you'd be putting to some of those people, because in those meetings you'd also be looking to a solution to this kind of problem. So I think you've answered my question and your question as well, and you said, you know, you sometimes just keep quiet within those meetings because the answers or the forthrightness to deal with it is not forthcoming.
100%, 100%. And, you know, the other factor that we have, if we take in the towing industry, you know, we see so many complaints daily. And let me tell you, the towing industry is an oversaturated industry. So we have been busy with the Department of Transport for years. We have already drafted a tow truck regulation document with the Gauteng Department of Roads and Transport. And even that is not getting anywhere. So, you know, we are drafting these things. We're putting these things together, and it's got to be legislated. It's got to be passed. But that is not where our job comes in. That's got to go back to the local legislator and to national, so forth. But, I mean, the last meeting that we've actually had is a towing association with Department of Roads and Transport in Gauteng, where we drafted the regulation document specifically for Gauteng as the to piggyback off that. Is a couple of years ago. So, you know, it's just in my opinion, we're making a noise, some of us, as we are passionate about what we do. Our industry, we want to be professional. We don't want to have the hooligans that we do have. And it's unfortunately, it's the minority that are hooligans in our industry, although it sometimes looks worse. But if we don't get the support from government, and the biggest thing here is where government has said to us, even in our own meetings, you as a towing industry must self-regulate. We cannot self-regulate until the day that government decides to say, we recognize you associations as bodies that can regulate. We will give you that power. If we don't get that power, how do you want me to enforce the law? I'm not the law enforcer. So, you know, it's unfortunate in my opinion that government is just lackadaisy. You have changeover of different heads of department. And then the next person's got to start from anew. So it just becomes a huge, huge challenge for us.
Etienne.
So, you know, if we go back to the truckers, You know, I hear what Mary's saying about we've got so many South African people driving.
Mm.
But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you've got people that are now employed. You can't just simply unemploy them. But if they are documented correctly and they're qualified, then, you know, if they've got the job, they do it. The unfortunate problem that we have sometimes is that, and it gets said a lot, is that sometimes the foreign drivers, and I'm not saying I'm supporting this, but I'm just saying what is being said outside, is that foreign drivers will work because they know if they don't work, they don't get paid. And one of our huge problems that we have is protests. Protests is unfortunately a huge issue, and it's not only in the trucking industry. But the problem comes back to driver behavior. And yes, I agree with what Simon said about roadworthiness and things, because I mean, I've seen some horrendous things of vehicles that have been in crashes and investigations done afterwards. You'll be shocked to see what you see. It's really shocking. So, you know, you also got to put the blame on the operator itself, where I think Mary was talking about it, but that's already in the National Road Traffic Act, that the operator can be held liable.
Etienne, you make me think you're almost like Eskom.
Going on and off.
No. No. You don't want people to use your services. Because ultimately that's the ultimate goal, isn't it? You know, you don't want people to use your services because ultimately that would mean less crashes.
No, for us, you know what? At the end of the day, we must remember one thing, and I've said this to a lot of my colleagues in the towing industry as well.
Mm.
You know, yes, it's your business, but when we oversaturate the industry, we sit with a problem because remember, crashes have also come down. I don't say it's come down a heck of a lot, but we've got a decade of action which was running from 2011 to 2020, which was supposed to bring down the fatalities worldwide by 50%. In South Africa, we were climbing.
Mm.
Now it's been extended to 2030.
Let me go to Simon. Simon, in 2 minutes, Brur, sum it up for me. What's the future look like?
Well, the future really lies in closer engagement of all the stakeholders, the operators, and all stakeholders, making sure that we work from the same hymn book, introducing regulations where the regulations are required and tightening up. Not only introducing regulation on its own is not going to work unless they are enforced. So also ensuring that there's tighter enforcement of those regulations. ATN refers to the PRDP, and I heard Mary talking about professionalization. That PRDP can't even be considered as a professional driving permit, really. If you look at it, to obtain that, you only have to go to a doctor.
That's what Etienne was alluding to, yeah.
Yeah, and he's right. They buy those medical certificates at the doctor's rooms. But yes, there is monitoring of previous offences that you have done, because before it is issued, there must be a police clearance. So for drunken driving, it's a criminal offence. You go to court and get convicted, and for reckless and negligent driving is also a matter that goes directly to court. So from that point of view, there's some monitoring, but maybe it can be improved upon. But once we start enforcing the laws strictly, it must hit the operators where it hurts most, in their pockets. Because then vehicles that are unroadworthy, they need to be impounded and removed from the road, so that until all the defects are fixed, that car can't be used. And
sure,
in that period,
sure,
the operator will be losing money, and they will then attend to these issues of roadworthiness of vehicles.
Sure. Let me go to Mary. Mary, 2 minutes.
Yes, we are now getting into the festive season, which is known as the, you know, high accident rate. And we are appealing to our truck drivers out there that, you know, they should be very patient. We know that most of them will be going on holiday. We might be seeing quite a few number of trucks. But they must, you know, emphasize the issue of the inspecting of the vehicles. And, you know, avoid overtaking, because trucks are governed to the speed of 100. So if you are overtaking another truck, then it means your speed is not normal. So, you know, we need to go to the government to assist us in this point of saying no overtaking. And, you know, they must be aware of the surrounding. And also to emphasize the fact that we are going to monitor the regulation very close. Mm. We've been working on this matter for the past 5 years, and we are seeing progress with it. And we are not going to leave it like that. We had a meeting today with the task team. They were presenting how it was going to be outlined and how it's going to be implemented next year, March 2023. Mm. So we are watching it very close. And surely South Africans are going to see something totally different. We are not going to leave it like that. Thank you very much.
Etienne, finally, the last word to you. Etienne, 2 minutes. What does a festive season normally mean to you, Etienne?
A very sad time, unfortunately. It's a very sad time. You know, when we start looking at how many people die on our roads unnecessarily. So I support what Mary said. You know, firstly, stop every 200 kilometers or every 2 hours and rest your legs. Don't take the chance.
Mm.
And to law enforcement, we plead, please, let's work together as everybody on the roads, law enforcement, together with the public and the motorists, and do the job properly. Enforce the law accordingly.
Mm.
Let's try and stop this thing of corruption, because corruption is killing people and nobody's being held liable for that at the end of the day. So I think just be safe and stop every 200 kilometers or every 2 hours. And if you're not sure, don't make new U-turns on the freeways like we see sometimes. Rather take off the next off-ramp, turn around and go back.
Mm. Simon Zwane, thank you so much for joining me on Power Perspective, bro.
It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure, Denzel.
Thank you, Simon Zwane. Always, Chief. Mary, thank you to you too. Mary, thank you so much for joining me here on Power Perspective.
Thank you, Denzel. It was a great interview, and we'd like to engage with Etienne further.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary. Etienne, lekker dat ons saam kon gepraat het, man. Ek hoor jy's Afrikaans.
Eindelijk is ek Engels, but thank you.
Ek het jou Afrikaans in die achtergrond gehoor. Jy weet, daar was 'n bietjie Afrikaans daar, of het ek misgehoor?
No, you heard 100%. It's just because I was standing up a couple of Afrikaans people, but we're becoming like King Charles now.
Etienne,
but, yeah, thank you for the opportunity, and Mary, I'd love to get in touch with you. You can get my details there from
sure.
Denzel.
You know what?
And
you
let's see how we can work together.
Etienne, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Tumelo to provide Mary with your information, and then I'll ask him also to provide the other way around as well. So he'll share the information likewise.
Super, thank you. Together we can try and improve on safety on our roads.
Etienne, thanks so much.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.